Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. For that listening enjoyment you all surely crave. So starting off, ladies and gentlemen, we're doing a little bit of an emergency fundraiser over here at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. My wife is rather ill with a liver problem and needs to do this real complicated and expensive thing to get rid of it, as well as another health complication, a giant fibroid that's almost the size of her uterus on her actual uterus. Now, that in and of itself can be a little bit rustic. Now, I apologize if I'm not coming in too clearly. You might have to just bear with me. American Freedom Radio, am I actually coming in clearly? I think I am anyway. Sorry, guys. Just had a whole new setup and everything going down here, and I'm like, I don't know. I must have had like maybe 3 panic attacks. I'm kidding. Like, just getting to that verge of like,
is this technologically good enough? Is it finely tuned enough? Am I got all the settings correct? Right. And can I do anything about it even if it was screwed up? No, I probably couldn't because I'm live radio and I have to produce myself, you know?
It's just one of those kind of weird, frustrating situations that is incumbent when you're the one who has to do all the work for yourself. Now, editing videos is something that I've been doing a lot of just recently. We put up a video of myself and local New Zealand, I would say celebrity talk radio show host, TV host, etc. As I called into a show on September 11th, a couple of years ago, when I was maybe a little bit earlier on in the days, but and we had a very interesting conversation about this. And just recently, I saw him at the David Icke conference and had a chat with him coming out of there. And really love to get him on the show, eh? That'd be quite interesting. Very interesting indeed. But anyway, it revolved around this talk of 9/11 and how many gargantuan red flags there are. And more to the point, conspiracies themselves, when you start researching into them, what are the consequences to you? Your psyche, you know, is this somewhat of a terrible thing that you've gotten yourself into? Are you absolutely going to be driven nuts and over the edge by studying some of the things that you are now studying as a conspiracy theorist, quote unquote? And the answer is possibly. Possibly. Right? Something Jordan Maxwell told me is you get what you pay for. You get what you pay for. It's a very scary thing to think about because I understand that people are, shall we say, subjugated in a number of ways that they often aren't aware of. They have a fear of stepping out. They have a worry about the reactions that people will have to what you're telling them. And it's funny because listening to this conversation a few years on, I found out that a lot of those questions and a lot of his concerns that he asked me about conspiracy in and of itself are now almost quick fire answers for me, like sort of figured them out, those basic things. How do you get somebody interested in conspiracy or whatever? It's simple. The information grenade. You say one factoid. You pull the pin and you chuck it in. You ask one interesting question. You pull the pin and you chuck it in. And if they don't react, you walk away. And it blow or change the subject. And it just may blow up in their face later. It's the approach called the seventh man. For each very deeply held belief we all have, maybe the first person who says something that's totally contrary to it, we'll tell them to fuck off. But if it's the seventh person, different person, it's seven different times in our lives, come up to us, said the same thing that's contrary to our very deeply held beliefs, we'll actually start to question them, right? Now, this is the concept that I call it, that information grenade approach, because ultimately, you don't know if you're the seventh man. You're probably man one, two, three, four, maybe. And you're going to get the same response as they all did. You're not going to get one. That the penny has not dropped for this person yet. They're not yet capable of seeing it. It's not your fault that they can't see it. But it is your responsibility to point it out just once and then drop it. Okay? That's it. That's the interesting approach that I've found works really good. And it works so well because I no longer have an emotional attachment to whether or not somebody accepts the truth or my version of the truth or my ideas of it. And I stopped getting zealous and vicious when it came to people calling me a conspiracy theorist. Because let's face facts here. If there's a definition for a conspiracy theorist, it's somebody who believes that powerful people who have a lot of influence are likely to use their power to maintain or expand that influence. Now, a coincidence theorist, on the other hand, says that people who have power, money, and influence only ever got that power and influence through noble means, and only ever use that influence for really, really nice, fluffy reasons. Now, clearly, the coincidence theorist is the person who's utterly insane, and they are often among the first groups of people to get exterminated by the conspiracy that they refuse to believe exists. I mean, you see how that works, because in herd mentalities, people will ostracize the outsiders. However, herd mentality is a double-edged sword, because it's been found in African predators that if one animal in the herd notices a predator approaching in the bushes, etc., they'll maybe be a bit spooked, but the rest won't. But if about 6% of the herd becomes aware that there's a predator in the grass, 100% of the herd suddenly knows that there's a predator in the grass. It's like that. There's this latent psychic connection that we all have, and I think it's predicated on a survival technique or something like that. It wouldn't exist if we didn't keep us alive, I think. That's kind of how nature works, you know. If you have a schlong, it's to perpetuate your species. If you have no brain, it's because you watch Fox News. When it comes to explaining what conspiracies are to people who don't know anything about it, just saying one statement is often met with that ridicule and they'll attempt to start an argument, right? What do you do? If somebody who doesn't know what the hell they're talking about starts arguing with you, arguing facts that you know were stuff that they made up, and you know that they made it up. You know, it's one of those really kind of ironic thingies. I don't quite comprehend the logic there, as if there was any logic, but it's just mind control. You're not dealing with somebody who's thinking for themselves. You're not dealing with somebody who can even think most of the time. I comprehend the frustration that people feel. There's a big threat. It's evil. It's very, very obvious to you. But to them,
it's not obvious.
It's obscured. It's veiled. You're grasping at straws. These are things that have taken you months, if not years, if not decades, to come to the conclusions on your own. You can't, if you're in any way rational, expect somebody to instantly adopt your new way of thinking just because you're right. What, you think because you've got facts? That matters? What? How do you think the conspiracy's been kept pretty much out of the mainstream consciousness? It wasn't scumbaggery alone. It's because it's so frickin' unbelievable, isn't it? Somebody comes up to you and says, hey bro, did you know that a couple of hundred years ago, this dude lied to people at the stock market after the Battle of Waterloo and basically intimated that the British had lost the battle and caused a stock market crash, and he bought up the British economy for pennies on the dollar, and then the following morning, when the royals received news that they'd actually won, the stock market went back up, and that particular dude owned England, and England controlled Europe, and Europe controlled the world. And they've controlled it ever since. That man's name was Rothschild. Now, if you're a New Zealand listener, you may, if you happen to like wind and freezing cold temperatures, live in Wellington, the capital of New Zealand, and observe our beehive, which was drawn up by our Freemason Prime Minister. Wasn't drawn up by him. Well, actually, a Freemason architect designed it, but the Freemason Prime Minister came up with the idea, you know, inexplicably, of the Freemason's perfect ideal society, which is kind of like a beehive, where everybody's a drone, apart from the Queen. You know? That kind of slavery master mentality? You know? Anything ringing a bell? Not yet? Not yet? Well, what if you go down into the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, which is not a branch of the government, even though the government like allows somebody to be what they call a commissioner or whatever the hell on it. And it turns out that these guys make all our money out of thin air and then loan it to the government in exchange for shares in the country. So they wind up owning our country by making fake money up out of thin air. And if you look behind the front desk, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand building near Molesworth Street, right next to the Parliament building, you'll see a big red shield behind it, which in German is pronounced Rothschild. Right? Well, not pronounced that, but spelt that in German. Right? Because that's what they do. They hide their name behind symbols, organizations, etc., so that you don't know who you're really looking at, who really controls you, who the hidden hand belongs to. And the concept of waking up to the reality that everything pretty much in your life that you've been taught thus far was either complete lies or not the whole truth, it can come as a slight shock to the system. You know, you're like, well, that's, you know, just slightly unfortunate. How long did you spend at school? Well, 16 years, I guess, you know, including higher education. Oh, yeah. And so now you have to start over again and relearn, unlearn everything that you've learned and then relearn it again. Oh, God. You know, that kind of loss. You just lost your life. You lost your perception of who you are, of what the world is, all of a sudden. And people are like wondering, why are these conspiracy theorists so crazy and angry and everything like that? It's because they realize they were living a lie. And they're desperately trying to wake others up to that possibility and being very hurt when those people don't listen and getting very angry that because you're right and they're wrong, you still don't get listened to. I understand how that grates on you, especially when it's to do with family, especially when it's to do with constant social media. This is a world bred for the persecution of conspiracy theorists, right? Honestly. It's like every single one of us has been turned into David Icke in the early 90s. You know, you can't say or do anything or like walk anywhere where people know you without being made fun of. It's weird, isn't it? And those who stop, and this is the interesting part about it, is I got an email from a listener who made a couple of interesting points, asked a couple of questions that I'd heard many times before, and I decided this time I'd actually answer these things and make a frequently asked questions page on my website, basically, in Figment. But he was thinking about this concept that, again, I'd heard before, that the New World Order's not going to win, it's going to be fine, I'm just going to make money, and that's all that really matters in life. You know, just to oversimplify it and miss the point, right? But there are people that have this mentality, that actually believe in the program so much that they actually love it and hate their own freedom. That just breaks my heart, man. And they actually want to justify working in jobs that they hate perpetually for a goal that they don't even know the purpose of, right? You got a house, you got kids or whatever, you know. For some people, just reproducing and having your offspring here is enough. Like, yep, I've achieved it. I've hit the pinnacle of my existence. I shagged a chick. She had my offspring. And then I left. And I've been drinking and smoking ever since. You know, job's done. It's just that kind of offhand, callous, unthinking participation in life that the program deems worthy. It deifies it, quite literally. I mean, if you have a look at any of the celebrities and reality TV show and everything, do they not treat these fools and scum as gods? Think about it. They are worshipped. They are paid a lot of attention to. A lot of donation money comes into them. You know? Feed the homeless. Feed all these people. And we'll only take 99% of the proceeds to pay our workers, who are mostly salespeople that are subcontracted out. Right? Charities are just money laundering tools. This is the world's worst industry to be in if you want to have a cogent train of thought without going off on wild fucking tangents. The worst! Because everything's so massively interconnected that you essentially need preparation time or experience and repetition of how to answer incredibly complex arguments with a little quip. Okay? And that is the key, I think, that Mikey Havoc was alluding to in our conversation, about being able to give people those one sentence explosive pieces of information, right? That would just blow their mind, that they'd take about maybe 5 days to get over or whatever, because they just came home and they're getting their kids ready for the school day tomorrow, and they're real tired because they had a bad day at work and not a very good night's sleep the night before, right? So you're competing for consciousness time. And the clock is ticking when people are rushing about their daily life. So if you are going to get a message across, you only have a couple of words to do so. And a couple of words that resonate, that actually mean something to the people reading them. Ignorance is strength. Things of this nature, these self-reinforcing concepts that are truisms in and of themselves, those are what memes are getting made of. And it turns out that memes is just basically another form of mind control that's coming out, some dude tells me. So there you go. You're fighting fire with fire, aren't you? Now, if there are truth memes, the problem is, how do you prove that they're true when you've only got a couple of words to say it? These people say factoids and things of this nature, and they don't even have a concept of why these people have no life, okay? I understand that if you're distracted for most of your life by girls and music and movies and things of that nature, then it could be possible that, you know, you might not have any idea who you are, because you've spent quite a large portion of your time on this earth not knowing what the point is to your existence. Literally not knowing what the point is to your existence, and worst of all, not knowing that you don't know the point to your existence, to rob you of your own destiny. That's what employment is all about. It's this brilliant concept that they came up with to pay people by the hour to rob themselves of their own destiny. Now, I've had a contact request by Dennis Wise from the Greatest Story Never Told. So, AFR, if you can hear the feed right now, bring him on in. That'd be quite lovely, if that works at all. I don't know. But distracting people from finding out who they are is paramount importance to the formation of the New World Order. Because if you want to program people, it's so much easier to program them if they don't have any foundation, all right? If it's just jellyfish sludge, they don't really believe hard in anything, they don't really have any strong convictions, they don't really have any roots or sense of identity, etc., that comes from within. If it's all externally motivated, I'm a goth, and like there's an entire belief structure, I'm a goth. Or I'm a right winger, there's an entire belief structure, I'm a right winger, etc., etc. So there's infinite, not rabbit holes per se. Rabbit holes lead to other worlds that are full of craziness and fancy in the Alice in Wonderland sense of the word. But these are... they're more like having a net at the back of your cricket or, they're more like the net in soccer, all right? It just stops the ball from actually going through and bounces it back the other way so that it can eventually start going back the other way towards the other end goal, which then bounces you just back in the other direction. So you start thinking that, hey, maybe working's not good for me, or maybe the free man thing's the thing for me, and then you wind up losing everything you ever worked for your entire life, right? And then you start from scratch again. Or if you think that maybe being involved in the particular job that you're in isn't good for you, or the particular religion or whatever, and then you adopt a different job or a different religion, which turns out to just be another carbon copy, inverted version of the same thing you were just trying to escape. All right? That is the game. And unless you realize that it's actually a game, you won't realize that there's goalposts that are fake at both ends of the field, and that the only way to be free in that game is to walk off of the field. Right? To turn your back on it. Suddenly, the goals, the points, the cheering crowd, the flashing lights don't actually matter anymore. Because they never mattered. What mattered was me. Because I'm the only one who can control myself. Other people can try to control me, but they wouldn't be able to control absolutely everything that I do at all hours of the day. There's a little bit of variation that's original, that comes from within. I remember listening to this quote from a band called Left Field. It says, if you place a thing in the center of your life that lacks the power to nourish, it will eventually poison everything that you are and destroy you. If even something as simple as an idea or your perspective of yourself or the world, nothing can be the source of your content. It lies within, in the center. Dennis, are you there?
I certainly am.
Okay, and do you have a webcam there?
No, I like to keep my identity secret because of past events for revisionists have proven awkward.
Okay, well, it's a great starting point to jump off then. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. A very special guest joining us, finally, the greatest guest who almost didn't show up. It's Dennis Wise from the Greatest Story Never Told.tv. Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood.
Welcome. I've actually been listening to your program as you were talking, so.
Okay, excellent. Well, you're fully up to speed then. Let's change topics then. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do?
Okay, well, I completed the Greatest Story Never Told a couple of years ago. This is a story about Hitler and World War II. Where at the age of 10, my father, who'd been fighting down in the Balkans on the side of the Axis, came over to the UK to escape the communist purge in Europe. At 10 years of age, he told me their side of the story. Their side of the story is not the same as the Allied side of the story, which the DVD clearly shows. And the second DVD, Communism by the Back Door, recently just finished, which explains why we are here today and who put us here since 1945.
And it's also a great strip club in Minsk.
It certainly is.
Well, I'm glad to see you still got your sense of humour after all these years,
Yes.
Mate. That's a hell of a lot of work because we're talking about literally hours upon hours of documentary narrated the whole nine yards. Where basically it's more or less a new history of the first half of the 20th century.
Well, I wouldn't say it was new. I would say it was true.
Let's say a new telling.
Well, we could say that, yeah, sure.
Mm. Now, that scope and that scale means that it's not a story that you can just... It's kind of like David Icke says. He says, the reason why I do 12 hours of lectures is because if I told you any one piece of this out of context without actually showing you how it came to be, you'd instantly reject it and call me crazy because you can't see how it's connected to all these other dots.
That's exactly true.
Yeah. So can you just explain briefly, well, you can't explain briefly. Tell you what, there's 20-odd minutes left in this segment. If you want to explain exactly what you want to explain in any way you want to do it, I'd actually really appreciate
it. Okay, well, obviously I was listening to your broadcast when we were trying to get in touch, and you was touching on the points which was quite true, the fact that the people involved in World War II and the Rothschilds were big players and have been ever since. So consequently, it goes right back to the start of the century when, first of all, the Federal Reserve was taken over by the international bankers. That then made the US a colony of London. The 1917 Russian Revolution was funded then by Schiff and other Wall Street bankers, and with the Bolsheviks winning that revolution, that made them a colony of the US via London. So we fast forward now towards World War II, and since the end of World War I, there has been an attempt to destroy Germany, as we find at this particular point in the 1930s, 1933, Germany is starving and practically bankrupt. In comes National Socialism, and in 1933 is a big year because in America, Roosevelt bankrupts America for the bankers, and it's American Inc., a corporation. In Europe, all the other countries were either bankrupted or expected to be bankrupted in favour, bringing laws out in favour of the international bankers. One country said no and suffered for it. And that country, I'm sure we all can guess, was Germany. Because when Hitler came into power, the first thing he did, he got rid of the international bankers. And so all of a sudden, they have lost the country, which they had, you know, a big part of, you know, the wealth, and it's not something that they take easy. So in 1933, they had an international meeting in Switzerland, international jury, and they came out with the conclusion that they're going to say to Germany, either get rid of Hitler or we will declare war on you, which is exactly what happened. Germany wouldn't agree. And so Samuel Untermeyer, and you can, this is all on the internet, goes back to America and gives a speech declaring a holy war on Germany, which in fact was a blockade of food. They were trying to starve them out, and an attempt to make war with Germany all along until Poland.
They did the same thing. Well, to back that up, they did the exact same thing to Japan. Pearl Harbor, what didn't just happen out of the blue? Australian intelligence reported to US intelligence that there was a giant fucking Japanese fleet on their way to Pearl Harbor, where a whole bunch of ships that were basically in disrepair and weren't really all that seaworthy anyway, but were still full of men that they could easily sacrifice and lose to inspire about a million more to join the next day kind of thing. That's a good idea. But how would they get them to do that? Why would Japan invade America, a place where their own general said, hey, don't invade America, bro, because they'll have a gun pointing at you from behind every fucking blade of grass. How did they do that? Well, they embargoed them with oil and hemp, which is why the Japanese eventually invaded the Philippines, where the US was getting a lot of its hemp products that it was making ropes and all manner of things with. You know, so they did the same thing to Germany, and it's just the bankers make the war and then they finance both sides.
Well, I've got a grievance with the financing of both sides, but you're quite true that the bankers made the war. I don't believe, for instance, they financed Assad in Syria. I don't believe they financed Gaddafi in Libya.
They did finance ISIS in Syria. They did finance ISIS in Libya. And they did finance NATO, who bombed them.
Yeah, but ISIS wasn't... ISIS was fighting Gaddafi. They weren't fighting for Gaddafi.
No. They were our allies.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that they didn't actually fund Gaddafi himself or Assad. And I don't believe they funded Hitler.
Yeah, well, the only reason why Gaddafi was invaded was because he wanted to throw the bankers out and do the gold dinar, all right? And it's just that thing. If you are either a threat and nobody's a threat to the bankers, so the bankers will just manufacture a threat and an excuse to go in, but if you're a threat to their money system, that's when you're a real enemy. So if you're producing your own money or something that's based upon solid wealth, you're in the crosshairs.
Which is exactly what Hitler did.
There you go.
And he brought the country back to prosperity in a matter of years. And people think that for some reason that he was building up his arms for war. He actually, if people look back and they check the Versailles Treaty, Germany wasn't allowed any navy, it wasn't allowed any air force, and they're only allowed 100,000 army. And anybody with the threat of communism, what was going on in Europe at that time, especially with the rise of Bolshevism, would understand why Hitler would have to actually rearm and rearm pretty quickly. Consequently, with the Poland episode, the real reason why Hitler invaded was he couldn't wait any longer because of the atrocities what were going on with the German ethnics, which is it's little been told about. But eventually he waited and waited and he tried to negotiate some kind of a deal.
Could you expand on that, the German ethics or ethics or the SS?
Ethics. No, after World War One, yeah. Parts of Germany was taken. Czechoslovakia was formed. Poland got a big chunk of Germany. And so there's ethnic Germans in these countries, which is why, for instance, there was the deal with Czechoslovakia, because they were having the same problem. German ethnics down there were also being brutalised.
Oh, you mean ethnic Germans, like how Austria had no problem with it because a lot of them were ethnically German, so they didn't even need to get invaded, etc., yeah.
That's right. Well, it wasn't just the ethnic Germans in Poland. There was other ethnics in there was getting the same treatment, but they didn't really have anybody with any power to say stop it. So consequently, when Hitler said this and nothing was done, there was something like between 100,000 and half a million on the border, refugees. And so Hitler invaded. He warned them and warned them and warned them. Hitler invaded. But all the time, England and France, the two world powers, two great colonial world powers of that time, had said to Poland, don't worry, we'll back you up. Well, consequently, Poland didn't last that long, maybe 6 weeks, if that. And so, consequently, England had declared war on Germany. We're talking England declared it, but actually Rothschild would have declared it because this was his opportunity now to try and take Germany back. So France and England attacked Germany, and they're defeated. France, again, 6 weeks' time, France is taken, and at Dunkirk, the British have to evacuate and leave all the weapons. That leaves Churchill then a choice because Hitler offered a peace deal immediately after that, which he turned down, and that wasn't the first one he turned down with Hitler. And at the end of the day, he knew he had to go to America like he had in World War One. They brought the Americans in. Then what helped him win the war? Now they're going again to Roosevelt to ask to win the war. Roosevelt at this point can't help him because the population, only 20 years after World War One, don't really want to get involved in another civil war in Europe. And so, I'm sorry, Mr. Churchill, can't help you, but I'll tell you what I can do. I can make a phone call to our other colony over there in the Soviet Union and see what they can come up with. So consequently, Operation Thunder was put into operation, which is swept away from the history books again, but recently because of the fall of communism in the Soviet Union, the archives were opened, and hey presto, Stalin was about to invade Europe, which Hitler had got wind of, and only invaded Barbarossa with Operation Barbarossa only 3 weeks before Hitler was about to invade, which was the reason why millions of Russian soldiers were all captured in the immediate opening days of that war.
Mm. Now, there was also a cooperation, I think, maybe it was the invasion of Finland by Russia and German forces taking the other part of that. But the other questions I have is about the Reichstag fire, and wasn't there some kind of radar establishment where German troops dressed up as Polish troops and attacked their own radar establishment in order to use that as just a bit of a public, shall we say, PR to invade Poland, to justify it to their own population and hiding the real reasons?
No, that was the Allies' excuse of why they invaded Poland, because obviously the truth didn't really get out for a long, long time. The German ethnics were suffering and had been suffering for quite some time. As far as the attack with Finland, as far as I'm aware, Hitler had a meeting with Molotov at one point with the Finnish leadership and left that meeting realising after what Molotov had said to him that he expected a war because of the way the Molotov was, the foreign officer for the Soviet Union.
And really? The guy like with the name Molotov wanted war? I guess nobody saw that coming.
No, maybe not. But that's, you know, that's the side I was told. And consequently, a lot of people have watched the, I know it's 6.5 hours long, like, but as you've explained about the David Icke syndrome, certain things have to be explained. And a lot of people now can fill in the dots where the other story didn't. You know, there was missing dots, and these a lot of people now feel that this is quite true.
Mm-hmm. But of course, feeling that something is true doesn't necessarily mm-hmm. make it so, and that's what's good about having the documentary and the long form is actually, you know, you don't have to leave out a whole lot. But again, I've seen so many other documentaries looking at this other side of, you know, what you consider the false side of this story about, sure. you know, inside jobs and the Department of Homeland Security being set up, and the very similar mechanism by which the United States is staging said attacks in order to subjugate their populations, and this being relayed to how, you know, so-called Nazi Germany did it sure. to their own people. Now, if these people are using the same tactics, were they in your opinion, using the same tactics to motivate their own population in Germany and whatnot that they're actually using to enslave people now?
Well, can we just backtrack a little bit? I mean, you spoke about the New World Order prior to me arriving. I've done the second documentary, New World Order Communism by the Back Door. Now, I believe that they are going to shoot a communist regime, and there's certain proof of that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you agree with that.
I agree with that. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, well, if we go back to 1933, when Roosevelt bankrupts America for the bankers, it is actually a communist system they want to bring in eventually. Okay. So when the 1944, we'll just jump to 1944 when they formed the United Nations. Anyone can look that up on the internet. It's based on the Communist Manifesto. The EU itself is based on the Soviet Union. It's one land mass, no borders, one currency, and 27 countries have given up the sovereignty. So it's all based on this communist style of government, which they prefer to democracy, because in democracy it's an illusion because you're allowed to vote, but the media can be manipulated, votes can be altered, but with communism you don't even get that opportunity. So this leads us now to the point where you're saying about the US using the same tactics. Well, in the second documentary, Communism by the Back Door, we established that the Bushes are neocons, and the neocons are formed by Jews in 1920 in the universities of New York. And you've got two lines. You've got the Stalinists and you've got the Trotskyites. The Trotskyites were the ones that managed to get into power by helping George Bush Sr. After he was kicked out of the CIA, and managed to get back into power with the use of these guys. Technically, this means now that America is run by communists. I know this will be a surprise to a lot of people, but it's a fact.
Well,
so
ever since
this is a communist regime.
Ever since they instituted the income tax and a whole
exactly.
bunch. And the entire raft of planks of the Communist Manifesto. You know, you
yes.
would have thought that people might have figured it out, but they haven't.
Well, they haven't. No, they haven't. So what you're talking about now is when you were saying they're using the same tactics as these Nazis were their deadliest enemy. These were the only people in Europe prepared to take on the Bolsheviks. And not only that, a lot of people miss this point as well, that it was a holy war. Because for all Churchill's speeches of, this upon this battle depends Christianity, words to that effect, it was actually, if you look at all the Axis powers, all the leaders of the Axis powers were all Christian. And the reason they went into the Soviet Union, even 50,000 volunteers from Spain who had just come off the back of a civil war with communism, volunteered to go into the Soviet Union with the Axis. So you look at Italy, Croatia, Bulgaria, all them countries that are either Catholic, Protestant or Christian Orthodox. Well, whatever happens, they go into the Ukraine and start opening up the churches. It was a holy war, which was declared, like I said, back in 1933 by Samuel Altemeyer. And a lot of people miss this because there was a lockdown in Europe. There had to be a lockdown in Europe. And the simple reason is because the Germans now are fighting the communists in the East. Stalin is begging his Masonic friends to come and open up a second front. So the Masonic leadership, which is Roosevelt, which is Churchill, take the Christian forces, unknowingly, to land at Dunkirk. And if you go to Omaha Beach cemetery today, you'll see all the graves of these soldiers, Christian soldiers, majority at least, landed on them beaches to, in fact, save Stalin. And in this cemetery, over the top of these graves is the New World Order, the capstick, the pyramid of the eye on top, which, you know, and a lot of Masonic features around that cemetery emphasize that these guys actually died for the New World Order. And the New World Order, as you've just confirmed, is communism.
Yeah. Now, that's the Agenda 21 kind of thing going in, the United Nations and all of this sort of thing. Now,
sure.
That brings me, well, because there was this concept for a long time that there was actually just two types of New World Order jostling for control, as every kind of power structure has these very, very similar yet slightly different in ideology groups of very powerful interests, right? And it's been talked about that Germany's great scientists and things of this nature, as we know, even there are mind control scientists who are running MK Ultra, which is a German import again, into the CIA mind control programs, got imported under Operation Paperclip, because German scientists were at the top of the game in the world. I mean, we're talking about basically one country that was able to take on a continent more or less single-handed without terribly large amounts of assistance. So their scientists, engineers, all forms of researchers were in extremely high demand, particularly by black ops agencies, the newly created OSS and the Department of Defense, which was renamed from the Department of War because of a suggestion by Edward Bernays. And most people think Bernays is a type of dressing, and it is. But the thing is, because these very, very large organizations with very broad ideologies in between them get represented by a single figurehead, like it's Hitler or it's Stalin or it's Trotsky, etc. People tend to lump everything in with it and not getting that whole picture of, hey, hold on a second. Maybe it's like a snake eating itself. Maybe there's actually two sides here that don't really know that they're part of the same agenda. Maybe they're being played off against each other, that kind of thing.
Well, I can only answer this way. After Versailles, all Hitler wanted to do, and he said this many times, in fact, he managed to do it, he wanted to break that Versailles Treaty, because that Versailles Treaty was strangling his country. And so consequently, once he defeated France and they had the meeting on the coach, if you can remember, you know, he brought the French delegates there and signed the defeat of France. He had actually brought that agreement. People think that he was out to rule the world at that point, but actually, by the time the Russians were about to invade, he wasn't even prepared to even take on the Russians. He was forced into that action, which is why several events happened in the Soviet Union, which he couldn't help because he got in too early.
And we will get into more of this after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, my very special guest is Dennis Wise. The Greatest Story Never Told.tv is his website. Now, bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com today and donate, please, to support the little operation that I've got going on here. Every single dollar counts, especially if you're giving a couple of dollars a week or $10 a month. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you after the break.
Thank you.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Sorry, in a rush back here. So many things going on. Absolutely crazy today. I've been producing a lot more work than usual, which is strange, because I produce a lot more work than most people do in a lifetime in the average week. Now, my very special guest, speaking of somebody who produces lifetimes worth of work, is Dennis Wise from the Greatest Story Never Told .tv. And we're talking also now about communism, and it's a kind of global takeover that sort of started then and is continuing today. So, Dennis, welcome back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now,
nice to be back.
Could you please continue?
Well, people are probably wondering today when you look at Europe, for instance, and they see this flood of migrants. And a lot of people can't understand, you know, just what is going on when somebody like Merkel turns around and says, come on in, and they're not even checking passports. And consequently, you know, within a matter of years at this rate, the whole German population will be, you know, possibly Muslim. A far cry from what it has been for centuries. So for people who don't really understand what's happening, this all connects back to World War II. In fact, it goes even further back. The Nazis, in fact, were pretty immaterial to it all. I know this might sound a surprise, but they came along because of this Versailles Treaty, which was killing Germany, forced this rise in nationalism. But this was going on even before Adolf Hitler was even heard of. I don't know if any of your viewers, or even yourself, any, have heard of a guy called Richard Coudenhove-Kalergi.
No.
Okay. Well, this guy's central to the policies of the EU. And in 1920, he wrote a book called... Sorry?
Yeah. If I may, it's always the people whose names you don't know and could probably find difficult to pronounce that are behind the most powerful movements in history, isn't it?
It certainly is. Well, it is in this case, because he wrote a book which hasn't fully been translated yet, but he wrote a book in Germany, The Practitioner Idealismus, which is the practical ideals, if roughly translated. And his, his dream was to make Europe multi-mixed race and dumbed down in education, and ruled by the elite. And this is the stance that the EU have been taking since the end of World War II, since it's formed. Actually, Truman saw a write-up of his in a magazine and actually used it for American policy as well. So this guy, like I said, is highly rated in the EU. Many people have never heard of him, but they actually have an award given for people who, shall we say, do their utmost to make sure that this dream comes a reality. And amongst them people, you'd be surprised to hear, people like Kitchener and Bill Clinton and Tony Blair and Merkel and one or two others, Pope John Paul II. These were all given this Kalergi Prize for the amount of work they put into opening up the borders in Europe and eventually for Merkel to let them all flood in. And the idea is as you've probably noticed, the white race is now under threat.
Well, I would say that it's human freedom in and of itself and the human genome in and of itself that's under threat here. All races, I think. What's happening is a long-planned thing, is that if you can mix people together, you can destroy them because they don't have any distinct and unique definable characteristics, and it's 100% much
correct.
Easier to control them.
Yes, that's exactly true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but you've got to remember, I'm speaking from the German side of that war, and Hitler already knows about Coudenhove-Kalergi. In fact, he had to, when he rejoined Austria, because we was all told that Germany invaded Austria, which we all know is not, you know, Austria was always with Germany, they rejoined them. cooled off Kalergi, had to escape there. He then moved to France. When France fell to the Germans, he had to escape France, and he managed to escape to the US, which is where, like I said, Truman saw his works and adopted it in 1946. So this was well known in Europe by the Germans. And so by the time Hitler came along, he was well aware of it. And so this is the reason, for instance, that he used to pay people that got married in Germany, he would pay them 1,000 marks, and for every child they had, they didn't have to pay the debt back, because he knew that the birth rate had dropped since World War One. So that all leads up to today. And when you're saying about the communists in America, that's been covertly succeeded in many ways. I believe Obama, and certainly if Clinton gets in, she's going to take great strides to removing them guns, which is probably the one obstacle which stops them going full out in the US.
Now, these are sensitive issues as well, and I know, because one time I got suspended from school because I had a discussion about what racism is and how different races express that racism towards other races. Sure. and made the point that Caucasians will often use demeaning jokes as a point of inference that they're superior to other races, right? Then... And of course, the Maori girl at the table asked me for for an example, and like an idiot, I told a Maori joke. So she then went to the vice principal and told her that I had been racist and said that Maoris were all bums anyway, and I got suspended from school for trying to have a mature debate about what racism was and how different races expressed it towards other races, right? Sure. At the age of 16. Now, that's what will get you into trouble, looking at things from other people's perspective and trying to be impartial, because those people are not impartial and they're not prepared to look at it from your perspective. You know exactly what I'm fucking talking about, don't you, bro?
Well, that depends on what you think, if Hitler was racist or not.
Well, anybody who doesn't talk bad about Hitler automatically has this laundry list of people who hate you all of a sudden before looking at any of your work.
Well, the problem is that the documentary goes on to prove beyond doubt that the SS was the most diverse army since the Roman army.
They had a Jewish contingent. They had an entire regiment, I think.
150,000 Jews fought for Hitler.
Boom, there you go.
Yeah, plus the Muslims fought for Hitler, and plus many, many volunteers from around the world came into Europe who knew the story, fought for Hitler. And Hitler was, his racism was German racism. How can I explain this? He felt that each race should do their utmost to be the finest and be the best. And obviously his race was German, and so all his laws and everything were to make sure that the Germans as a race were at their best, well-educated, you know, well-fed, you name it. But he wished that for all races. I mean, he spoke highly of the Anglo-Saxon race. Britain never actually wanted to go to war with them. But he also, like I said, he had Muslims what were fighting for him, and others as well. Even the Russians, what were against Stalin, were fighting for him, obviously, because they didn't want to be under communism. So there's a whole myth about Hitler being this out-and-out racist. There's a whole series of photographs on Google Images. You can quite easily find these colored guys in German uniforms.
And let's not forget, calling somebody in 1930s and 40s a racist by today's standards is fucking ridiculous.
Exactly.
I mean, racism was everywhere in all forms at all times. This was a time when the US still had blacks and whites only toilets. This was when apartheid was still going on in South Africa, you know, and that kind of thing. So to be called racist at that time, dude, change with the times, man. Right now, we're a little bit different, but I think that we've just been fucking engineered to be different.
Well, interestingly enough, it mentions this in the first documentary. While Roosevelt and Churchill was calling Hitler a racist, It was only, I think it was the year that Hitler was born, that the last of the Indians was wiped out. And it's quite true that the British first brought the concentration camps with the Boer War, where 28,000 women and children died of starvation. So for these people to call Hitler racist was utterly lunacy.
Again, public relations, it's propaganda, exactly. It's PR, and
yeah.
The first casualty of war is what?
The truth.
Exactly.
Can I just go to this point? This will shake you up, and it will shake a lot of people up, and I do want to get this in before, in case we forget. At the end of, in the final episode of Communism by the Backdoor, I said to you that this Kudinov Kalergi was central to everything, and his policies are still being followed today by the EU, and you can find this again on the internet. In 1946, Winston Churchill made a speech in Switzerland praising the work of Kudinov Kalergi. Okay, he was awarded that prize, what I mentioned, that Blair and everybody else, you know, were central to this Europe, this vision that he had of a mixed race, dumbed down Europe. Consequently, that means, in essence, logically speaking, right, that the very people at Churchill's funeral in London with the very people that he wished to see wiped out. And if there's any proof in the pudding today, you look at London, and London, the British are no longer the dominant people in their own capital. And this all comes from that agenda. And that agenda has been known by every Prime Minister since World War II and every President since World War II. And it's played as daylight.
As it was said in Captain America, the Winter Soldier, when history did not cooperate, history was changed.
Exactly.
Isn't that interesting how it doesn't... fuck. Dude, I just had this realization right now. Alan Watt once told me that the New World Order is so good and they've been operating for so long that any sure. single mass movement or any kind of person that can try and break away from the superstructure of their communist world government of no God but technology, right?
Yeah.
Right? Gets identified and either turned or neutralized, silver or lead. Right?
Yeah.
You either take the bribe or you die. Now, there's a lot of people that are of great prominence. I don't know. It seems strangely epidemic within the last couple of years. Movie stars and terrorist yeah. attacks. That's the only two things that seem to be constant all the time that don't normally happen.
Yeah. Well, the second documentary handles all that. It handles the music industry. It handles Hollywood. And the propaganda coming out of Hollywood, because we all know our history from Hollywood, or most people. So consequently, this takes us back into Freemasonry, and the roots of Freemasonry go all the way back to Egypt and the Kabbalah, and this is where, you know, the Jewish side of it comes in as well. But the documentary explains all this in the simplest form that it possibly can, because obviously not everybody can sit down and read a book about Freemasonry. So you've got to make this as, you know, as open and simple as possible. We are, you know, being detrimental. So this is exactly what I did. And all the episodes in the second documentary, you can watch at any time, because they're all individual episodes on certain aspects. For instance, at one point, I got one of them moments when I realised that Bill Cooper in America, who had no idea about Hitler whatsoever, because he just thought National Socialism was the same as any socialism, and he hated socialism. And so he looked at Hitler like most of these American historians do. They don't go much farther than actually the war and good riddance, when actually they don't realise that National Socialism was the deadly enemy to Marxism. And so consequently, he was coming from one direction and I'm coming from another, and suddenly we met in the middle. His work completely matched up with mine, what he was talking about, you know, the agendas, which he discovered by... He was once in the Demolay Society. I think he visited it three times before he was actually moved to Japan with his father, because his father was in the military. He was only a young boy. And so when he joined the military himself, he actually signed Freemasonry because he couldn't see anywhere where he said any members of any clubs. He didn't find Demolay, so he just put Freemasonry, and the world opened up for him. This is what he says. He's the only person possibly in history that has had the advantage of looking at these agendas, which he couldn't believe his own country was working against the population.
Now,
this is going back to the Roosevelt situation of him being communist.
Now, there's also the question of secret societies being involved. Now, there was Freemasonry, of course, this we know, but there's also the Vril Society, of which I'm not too familiar, but of which Hitler was a member, yes?
No, this is another big myth. I mean, the Vril Society was a big player before National Socialism actually took off. It was in the really early beginnings. But any historian will tell you, once Hitler took over, it didn't last 5 minutes. And consequently, as the research took me, it showed how Hitler destroyed Freemasonry in not only Germany and the occult societies, closed them all down, arrested Crowley's best friend. Crowley managed to get out in 1932. He was a little bit wise. But he actually destroyed the occult societies and Freemasonry in Germany and across Europe. And the proof I have of that is I managed to find some footage of the Germans in the Channel Islands, which is notorious over the past few years for child offences and the Freemasonry link, all that involves. But they have a guy there talking about when the Germans came and how they gutted the whole place and took all the artefacts back to Germany, back to Nuremberg, in fact, right, to put on display the evil of this secret society.
Mm. Now, it's been played in the media and even in films that Hitler was obsessed with occult power, and then, of course, there's Raiders of the Lost Ark and things of this nature that he's looking for religious
Hollywood
artefacts. What do you make of all of
Correct.
This?
Right. Well, it's quite simple. I've looked into all of this, and like I said to you, it is this has been going on. This good and evil battle has been going on since, according to E. Michael Jones, at least, since the foot of the cross, when the Jews neglected Christ, they didn't accept him as the Messiah, and have been revolutionary ever since. So there's been this battle between Christianity and Judaism, if you like. Now, consequently, what's never mentioned is in these occult teachings today, one of the leading players is the Lucis Trust. And the Lucis Trust have offices around the corner from Buckingham Palace and Parliament. They also have offices in the United Nations in New York. And the Lucis Trust housed the teachings of Blavatsky and Alice Bailey. So consequently, you've got to say to yourself, if Hitler's destroying all the Freemasons who actually preach the preachings of Blavatsky, and yet the United Nations are alive and well today with the Lucis Trust in offices opposite them and have a big say in the New World Order, who are the occultists?
Also, it has a meditation room in there.
Of course it has, yeah. It's got a meditation room. And the belief that I have, and many others have, is that the New World Order will consist of one world government, a communist-run government with a Luciferian doctrine and one currency and one army. So there's no rebellion.
Nobody will come into the New World Order without a Luciferian initiation.
Exactly, which means, the end for Christians.
Yeah. And people forget that, they say that Black Lives Matter. Yes, they do. But did you know that blacks are not the most persecuted people in the world right now? I think that actually the most persecuted and the most made fun of openly, in public, ridiculed, is Christians.
Yeah, for sure. But let's not forget even the blacks have been used by the Jews, because in the documentary also he goes on to explain, Michael Jones does a great job. He's got some great books. He's got some great speeches. And he explains how the Black Panthers, for instance, was funded by the Jews. Communist again, and this has gone on. I mean, Soros at the moment is the guy funding Black Lives Matter, and the eruptions in the Ukraine. So there's a Jewish, let's say, a billionaire behind every curtain.
Yeah, I mean, and they don't even care about their own people. I mean, if you don't even look like they want to, like the experiments that were done on Sephardi Jewish children with radiation, they said it was a headlights experiment, and then shoot them with like 50,000 times the normal dose of radiation, you know, on an X-ray, right? Oh, they must really care about their own people and their ethnicity. No, they care about power and sacrificing human life to the blood gods that they worship, basically.
Well, I think another point we've got to point out as well, I know some people on my side of the fence are saying they're not totally with it, but Benjamin Friedman, who was a Jew who was at Versailles in with all the others and saw how you know, the planning of the future route was taking place, actually changed to Christianity and became a whistleblower, and everything that he said so far, what I've researched, has been true. And he talks about that most of the Jews today, 97%, are not originally from Israel or the Promised Land. They're Khazarians who changed the faith centuries ago.
Yeah,
and they come from the far part of the outer regions.
Dig this.
Yeah,
if I were to become a member of a black church, that wouldn't make me black. Just like adopting the Jewish faith doesn't make you Jewish. All right? It's kind of like that scene in The Big Lebowski. Come on, Liv, Walter, you're not even fucking Jewish, man. What the fuck are you talking about? You're fucking Polish Catholic.
Exactly. And these Ashkenazis are all these are all the international bankers. And this is Rothschilds. These aren't people who were originally in the Bible.
Yeah. Well, I find it ironic that the Ashkenazis are also anti-Nazis.
Well, they would be.
You know, you can't make this shit up, folks. But anyway, we were talking about this whole concept, and I got into an argument with a guy one time about this. Why do you call them the Jews? Why do you call them the Jews? Because you do, as anybody who involves any kind of research into any kind of alternate history, current history, real history, etc., anything that's outside of the mainstream programmed indoctrinated thinking, will have a spectrum of people that get attracted to it and exist within it. For example, there's the incredibly intelligent people who are actually onto it and actually know what they're talking about and do their research and are reasonably humble because ultimately, it's the only reason they were able to do their research is to think for a moment that maybe I was wrong and start looking into it. The possibility, the questioning, that's what it is about. And on the other end of the spectrum, right down here, you have people who have a three-word vocabulary, like I am Groot, but it's the Jews. It's the Jews. That's this is the one group of people that just kind of frustrate the living hell out of me. It's like, dude, you don't need to attack me or anything like that. Just reveal the information, and I will listen and become learned. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I mean, people always say, like, why do people always say the Jews? But when you look back in history, they have been behind everything. And Their method is to divide and conquer, which is what they're doing with America now, with the blacks and the white race, and likewise Muslim and Christianity.
Let's back this up. What is a Jew?
Well, a Jew, supposedly, is, I mean, if you're talking an original Jew, is from the original Semite in the Bible, who was eventually driven out and told to wander the world. That is why I would consider a proper Jew. But these Ashkenazi Jews, who were a much vicious, much violent race originally, and have grown into this tremendous organization, one has to take the hats off to them, and possibly even satanic organization, as the Rothschilds are the leaders of.
Now, we talk in the movement a lot about archontic entities and these basically these controlling parasites that latch on, build up empires, crash them, change their language or their appearance or whatever or form, and then come back and then do it all over again and then just feed off the doom and the misery.
Now,
okay, so that's basically what we're talking about here. Now, according to my studies, it's not confined to any race, background, or anything like that. It kind of hits everyone. It's like the old phrase that it rains on the just and the unjust alike. And these parasites are everywhere, all throughout history. But what's different now in history is that these parasites are coming to a form of fruition, where for the first time in history, maybe they've got the technology to actually make a permanent happy hunting ground for themselves with a completely controlled, domesticated population that would never be even able to contemplate the concept of resistance to them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so when people go out and they start talking about the New World Order or alternate or history or anything of that nature, they don't know what they're up against.
No, they don't. No, it's quite true. Like I said, you've got to take your hat off to them because of what they've achieved. But they've achieved it in many ways by using other people. They're only 2% of a population in most cases, so they have to use other people. And the means they've used in the past is feminism. You know, they have to break down this. The great central arc of Europe was the family. In any country that, you know, for a high moral family, you know, with you know, national feelings of love of country, this is a great oak which can only be defeated by infiltration mostly. And so what they've done is they've used feminism, they've used usury is another means, people being enslaved in debt. They've used, as we talked about before, even the black society to break up culture in America. In fact, during the war and even after the war, they brought the blacks up from the south into, like, say, Chicago and drove the whites out. White flight took place, and they're using other means of coming down on certain people. And consequently, they've used Hollywood as well, the propaganda coming out of there, where we see today, for instance, the feminizing of men, where, for, you know, most Hollywood stars have at least once worn a dress. And consequently, if they don't do this, like Dave Chappelle, for instance, then your career comes to a sudden halt. So all these little, I'm saying little, but they're quite major, cultural attacks on the family, even abortion, even easier divorce, this all stems from this attack on this structured Christian society, because if you don't have a Christian society, you will have a society run by Jews.
Do you think that this one's been going on for quite some time, since the crucifixion to Christ kind of thing?
According to E. Michael Jones, he believes that this has been going on since they kind of rejected what he calls the Logos, yeah, the word of God, and they didn't accept Jesus as the Messiah. They turned away. And some research, what's took me down some roads, is that their God is not the same, who the Jews believe in now, is not the same God as we believe in. You know, they're waiting for an Antichrist, which they're hoping to come shortly to show the world that, you know, that's, after a major war, this is kind of peace after chaos, where they can all form into one world with one government and one leader. And this is their aim. And looking at it with all the technology, where they can track people with phones, the internet is not called a net for no reason.
How interlinked is the Jewish power structure with Freemasonry? Because from what you were saying there, that's like step-by-step Freemasonry.
Of course it is, yeah. Freemasonry is admitted by some Jewish scholars to be Jewish and nothing else.
Yeah. That's exactly what it sounds like to me. It's essentially a weaponized ancient way of doing things. Like, you know how in modern times we've got, you know, the justice system and the carriage of justice, and then back in the day it was a lot more brutal? It's kind of like that back in the day sort of brutal approach has been preserved in a very, very sufficient nougat of scumbaggery that is able to metastasize and just basically infect society and remain secret and hidden from detection And when it's exposed, the people who expose it don't last very long. And yeah,
correct.
Under constant surveillance and things of that nature. I've got a couple of friends who, you know, like you, don't want to appear in places too public, and they're stalked all the time. And it's just a really, really freaky thing when you realize that the biggest Freemason whistleblower in 100 years said live on my broadcast that the 33rd degree in the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry in Dallas, Texas, is the Illuminati. Right?
Yeah, and I would imagine the Washington as well. Temple in Washington.
I mean, it's got more Masonic lodges in Washington, D.C. than any other place on Earth. And the floor design, the actual street design and sections that it's cut off with, are in the shape of a pentagram.
Exactly, yeah. No. And you've got to remember, the one president that warned his nation about secret societies ended up shot in public as a warning for any other president who has any similar ideas.
Yep. And apart from, what was it, Eisenhower, he didn't get shot, but he ended up around, but his daughter is, I think. Or granddaughter.
Well, I think, his daughter's around. I haven't got a lot of time for Eisenhower because, consequently, research shows us that after the war, the Morgenthau Plan, which was presented to Churchill and Roosevelt, which they signed, was caught on by the press, and Roosevelt then denied, I could have signed such a thing. The Morgenthau Plan was the equivalent to the Versailles Treaty, which wanted to see the death of at least 15 to 20 million Germans. It was implemented secretly, and Eisenhower was central to this, where 1.5 million German soldiers were left in camps and just with no means of any toiletries, no means of any food, no water. Anybody who was to bring any food or water towards them would be shot, and consequently, 1.5 million perished. There was some more perished in France with the same tactics, and obviously in the Soviet Union, a handful of Germans returned after the war. So consequently, with the land being switched now over into the Soviet Union in the far side of Prussia, in East Prussia, and all the Germans were told to get out at 5 minutes' notice, there was millions killed and starved in that ethnic cleansing as it was. So consequently, James Bask, who wrote the book Other Losses, he goes into great detail to show that 15 to 20 million Germans were actually killed after the war.
Yeah, and even during the war, the huge amounts of atrocities, huge, like German...
the rapes.
Prisoners of war, German prisoners of war being shot en masse by American troops after the landings in Normandy and things of this nature, right? It was kind of like a... when you think you're the good guy, you will allow yourself to commit atrocities in the name of doing what you think is right. And that's why I consider myself personally to be the bad guy. Not because I actually think I'm the bad guy, but because I know if I actually if I started to become the bad guy and I thought I was the good guy, I wouldn't know the difference. But if you think you're the bad guy and you try to not be the bad guy and just do everything good, you know that you're good.
Yeah, you're holding yourself back from that arrogance of thinking you're good. I totally understand that as well. But then again, I don't blame the British soldiers or the American soldiers to an extent, because they were fed this propaganda. Europe was in lockdown, and all they were told was this monster is doing certain things in Europe, and so they believed the leaders, but the leaders were Masonic, you know, and they still are today. And the basis of Freemason, the whole essence of Freemasonry, is to see a one-world communist government.
Mm-hmm. And that is why I want to do a remake of the Alanis Morissette song Ironic and just changed it to Masonic, you know? And isn't it Masonic?
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Well, this all ties in with the music industry as well, because you look at, you know, they're going around with the Illuminati symbols, Beyonce, and it's like Hollywood is run by homosexual Freemasons, basically. And the music industry is no different. And so if you don't abide to their agenda, then your career is going nowhere.
Yeah.
As we just mentioned earlier about Dave Chappelle. But if you're an aspiring musician and you've got that opportunity of selling millions of albums or going back on the dole and just working in a mundane job 9 to 5, a lot of people's going to think, you know, well, I've got to go with the flow. And a lot do. But there's a lot more who love that side of it as well, like Beyonce and you know, some of the actors, Brad Pitt, who kind of push the agenda.
My friend Ralph Engel from This Flight Tonight, the dude's amazing. I got to jam with him one time, right? And he got offered this contract, but he started to look into who was offering the contract, who the producer was, who was connected to, what is it? You know where he was? He was a Jewish banker. And you know what the advance was for your record contract and everything like that? It was a debt. So when he tells you to go out and mix and mingle and pay to, for tickets and VIP passes to all this gig so you can talk to all of these big famous people and push your stuff, et cetera, and if it doesn't pay off, you owe that debt to him. And even if you do, even if it does pay off, you're still in debt to them for the rest of your career, right? And Ralph saw this, right? And he's just like, no. And you know what he does now? He's a busker in England. Right,
where and he's probably better off for it.
Where now busking is starting to be made illegal.
yeah, you're right.
Because you're of laws passed by Jewish bankers.
Yeah. You're 100% correct.
For fuck's sake!
I mean, this is why. I mean, if people check up, you'll find that your country is a corporation. I mean, Australia, for instance. I think it's. I forgot the proper name of it, of the company, but you can find it. It's on the, just Google it, you know, Australian Corporation. The address is in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Registered at the Securities and Exchange Commission. And the New Zealand Corporation is called the Queen and Right of New Zealand, registered at the exact same place, which means it's on the stock market, which means that they have socialized, as communists do, the back-breaking labor of every motherfucker who lives in their country and leveraged it and borrowed money from, you guessed it, Jewish bankers.
Right. And can I just add on the end of that?
Whoa, let me finish.
Well, go on, carry on.
Then converting the population, their fur, into livestock.
Cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is exactly what the Talmud preaches. Well, can I just add on to all of that? The person they most demonize in the whole world was the guy who fought them in World War II.
Now, when I woke up to the truth that not everything is as it seems, and most of what you have been told is either a lie or a half-truth, and then somebody tells me Hitler was actually a good guy, I didn't reject it straight away. You know, it's just like, well, let's have a look into this kind of thing, because everything that you've been told is a frickin' lie. And so why would this be any different, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, he fought these international bankers. So you make of it as you will. But this is what the first documentary explains. There's a lot of groundwork in there showing certain things, the David Icke syndrome, which is 6.5 hours. But then the second documentary is a lot more about since 1945, since the takeover of the Vatican, for instance, with Vatican II. Various things what have happened. I explain Hollywood, I explain the music industry, even the fact that Deborah Tavares, this present time in America, has come across this bankruptcy, which the banks are now claiming back for this collateral that with the crash in the 30s, all these the grandparents were used as collateral, and the banks are now coming back for the land. This is happening in England as well, and it's not in the mainstream, where people's houses are being taken off them for pennies, and being thrown out of these houses. And in one instance, in the documentary, I show a one single parent family in Manchester being evicted from a debt which he disagreed with, which was £6,000, which with the compound interest went up to £70,000, which he couldn't possibly repay. And they didn't use bailiffs to remove him; they used the police, who were normally there to keep the peace between the bailiff and the owner-occupier. But it was the police what went in, brought down the doors, and took the house.
By chance, did the police have black and white Masonic checkers around their caps and on their shoulders?
Well, they have blue helmets, but as you know, when you take the helmets off and put them caps on, they are Freemasons.
Oh, really? And by chance, is about 33% or some odd of the sworn British police officers also sworn Freemasons?
Well, this is why all these paedophile cases just run and run and run until, you know, maybe one dies, like Jimmy Savile, it'll come out, but not until they die, because they have this blood oath to protect fellow Masons, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, imagine what you could do, ladies and gentlemen, if the members of your secret society who have a blood oath to protect you and never say a bad word against you are some of the most powerful people in the world, and so are you. Imagine the things you could do. Imagine the things you could get away with. Imagine the schemes you could hatch. Imagine the things you could finance. Imagine how dark your desires would begin to get once you start testing the limits of your power. And imagine how much darker they would get if nobody ever rose to challenge you. Think about that for a minute. I always try to
think about the teachings. Yeah, well, you think about the teachings of Aleister Crowley.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a Freemason, and he's highly regarded in the music industry and in Hollywood, and the debauchery that he got up to defies any possible morality.
Now, this was one question that I forgot to ask you. I haven't had one of these moments in maybe a couple of years. Mm-hmm. When you hear a piece of information or a story or a piece of testimony that actually really hits you so hard that you actually have to stop for a second, you can't actually physically...
Yeah, it's happened to me.
It's so freaking horrific. And it's the stories of the pedophile abuse, right, that have always been, and the sexual abuse and the stalking of women and things of that nature by these Freemason gangs. That's the stuff that hits me at a very gut level as a man, because as a man, I feel programmed this need to protect those that are smaller than me, and as a man to protect women, right? So when you see that they're, and you know, and you hear testimony about huge pedophile cults responsible for the disappearance of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of women and children per year into human slavery and death, that hits you at a real guttural level. And sometimes you can't continue to work because you have to take a bit of time to process how horribly you feel about that. And then something even worse happens. You try to ignore the fact that it's going on just so that you can continue to do your work fighting against it. So it I don't know how to reconcile this difference within myself.
Well, as we spoke about early on about Freemasonry and the involvement of the Talmud, which is the Babylonian Talmud, which the rabbis preach and is the real holy book of these Ashkenazi Jews, such as Rothschild. And in the actual Talmud, it kind of praises paedophilia. It mentions that, you know, it's... I think it's under a child under three, you know, the person can't be called the act paedophilia because of these holy rites of what the Jews are allowed to do according to God, or their God, should I say. And it's like I said, it all comes back to Freemasonry. It's all fed through Freemasonry. And so when you're talking about debauchery, a classic example of that was Berlin, even before Hitler got into power, where Berlin was the Babylon of Europe, was known for the Babylon of Europe, where paedophilia went on. You could buy anything for $10. You could probably buy anything from paedophilia to sex with animals, you name it. And the National Socialists actually cleared out Berlin even before they got into power. But certainly when they got into power, like all the remains of it was cleared up. And a lot of them did go to Hollywood, where, you know, these things have taken place. I'm quite confident in a place which is run by Freemasons and homosexuals, which was proven by John Travolta in a court case, And the fact that people like Will Smith, who is...
Whoa. John Travolta in the court case, explain.
Yeah, it was being sued was John Travolta at some stage for about $2 million. And he actually said in his defence that Hollywood was run by Jewish homosexuals who wanted favours for parts in films.
Corey Feldman has come out talking about this. A lot of the children, like the casting couch exists for children as much as it does for the hot young actresses as well.
That's right. I think I've got a quote from Gwyneth Paltrow, who had that same experience. So,
and
you know,
why
things
isn't
do leak out.
And for some reason, Gwyneth Paltrow's not getting any work. Did she appear in the new Marvel movie? No. Oh, I wonder why.
Exactly. Yeah. If like I said, if you don't stick to their agenda, then you know the work's going to dry up, and that's a big problem for a lot of people because they've got high standards. You know, they've been probably with fortunes for many years, and don't particularly want to go back to live in a normal, inverted commas, type of life.
I'm not entirely sure if I want to live in a satanic pedophile utopia. You know?
Decisions, decisions, yeah.
Weigh it up. Oh, God. The death of humanity. It's a source of great joke material. Now, I believe we're coming very close to the mm-hmm. end of the show. Now, I guess this probably isn't an issue for you, but has there ever been anything that's like kind of gone too far? You know how you got to like lay the groundwork for and everything like that. But actually, some of your beliefs and things that are based on evidence that, you know, you don't really say very often because people will think they're like really crazy. And I guess you don't really have that problem considering the documentary, right?
The documentary does the talking for me. I mean, we ask everybody to watch with an open mind, and you wouldn't believe the number of people who have had life-changing experiences. And another thing, I know very few people who, once they realise what the world lost, did not break down in tears. Because if you've got the moral standards and you love your family and you love everything about what's good in life, you saw that go down a drain in 1945.
Yeah. I felt the same way when I heard a particularly good JFK speech, and I was like, they fucking killed him.
Yeah. And he praised Hitler as well.
Yeah. You know, it seems that a lot of the things that we define our beliefs on and a lot of our emotional baggage or whatever have been manipulated for quite some time. And isn't it interesting, like, if you can get people to question and be confused about who they really are, they'll never figure out what anything else is.
No, it's a huge cobweb of mishmash, and it takes, I mean, probably even I'm scraping the surface on some things. It's just unbelievable how they can, it's as if, sometimes, you know, people criticise David Icke about certain things, but sometimes I look at what's going on in the world and I think these people can't possibly be human to even think of such a plan.
Yeah.
You know.
What do you reckon? Are they, there's the alien agenda, there's the reptilian theory, there's the archons, there's the psychopaths, there's the Freemasons. And I'm thinking, well, it's certainly not just the Freemasons and Jews and something like that. There's other conflicting factors on here which aren't explained by this one phenomena alone. Like, it goes a little bit deeper and far outside my comfort zone. Right.
Well,
have you ever noticed that?
This way?
If something's not outside your comfort zone, learning it is often not really that life-changing.
Well, all I can say is, from what I've studied and researched in the work that I do, I have to now keep an open mind about everything. I just have to, because I cannot be arrogant enough to say that I know it all, because the things that you've got up to and the roads that it could take you down, certainly the satanic road, whether people believe in God or not, you know, it's what these people believe. And I certainly believe there is a satanic element in it, which causes us a problem, even if we believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. Just like if, you know, some kind of fictional terrorist had happens to be financed by the CIA, blows himself up amidst a bunch of people who don't believe in his god of cocaine and drugs and pussy. And for some reason, those people didn't at that point believe that his beliefs could affect them. But because he blew himself up for his beliefs, it did, right? That's the whole concept that you have to get through for people, mm-hmm. I think.
Well, I think that's one reason they want to kill religion, because whatever religion you tie to, you know, you will go over that wall. Whereas you take that away, and there's a less chance of that person willing to take that risk by going over that wall, which is exactly what the Axis powers did by invading the Soviet Union in 1945. They went over that wall, I believe, to fight against a godless society, as they were believers in God.
Mm. And communism chooses to wipe out, well, essentially, as I said before, and this is what we're fighting against, isn't it, Dennis? The one world, moralless, horrific, detached from the almighty society in every way, shape, and form. Do you know what the survival rates were for atheists in POW camps in Vietnam, ladies and gentlemen? They weren't fucking high. But you know who did survive overwhelmingly? The people who had strong faith in God of some kind. Doesn't matter what you believe. Anything you believe gives you power if you believe in it strong enough. Now, thank you very much, Dennis, for your beliefs and actually sticking in there and putting that documentary together for people to actually learn the real history, bro. Good on you, mate. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Donate at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com because we keep giving airtime to people, whether or not we agree with them. Regardless, let's just have a conversation about it, and that's how we come to the truth. See you again sometime, folks.